From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. New technology is enabling meteorologists to more accurately forecast the weather. We'll hear about some of those advances from Chris Vaccaro, Public Affairs Director for the National Weather Service in Washington, D.C. And the Florida Public Radio Network is collaborating to bring storm information to everyone who can pick up a broadcast signal. Our guest is meteorologist Jeff Huffman from the University of Florida. Also here in Southwest Florida and on the state's East Coast, officials, environmentalists, and others are united against freshwater releases from Lake Okeechobee down the Coosawhatchee and St. Lucie Rivers. They say they're wreaking environmental havoc, but the Army Corps of Engineers, which controls releases, says they're necessary to protect the integrity of the aging dike that surrounds the lake. We're joined by the Corps' Lieutenant Colonel Thomas Greco and Rayanne Wessel of the Sanibel Captiva Conservation Foundation. First, this news. This is Gulf Coast Live on WGCU. I'm Valerie Alker. There's been a lot of rain this summer in Florida, and eventually much of the moisture that accumulates north of Lake Okeechobee flows into the lake that some call Florida's liquid heart. South of the lakes is the Everglades Agricultural Area. Thousands of people living there died when a crude dike below the lake gave way during a monster hurricane in 1926. Then came the Herbert Hoover Dike and the widening and straightening of the Coosawhatchee and St. Lucie Rivers. It's now possible to traverse the state via the Okeechobee Waterway. And those rivers also serve as escape valve of sorts. When levels in Lake Okeechobee surpass 15.5 feet, water is released down the rivers to make sure the dike holds and we don't experience another great loss of human life. And that is why we're having this conversation today. Joining us in the studio is Rayanne Wessel, Natural Resource Policy Director for the Sanibel Captiva Conservation Foundation. Welcome back, Rayanne.
Thank you.
And on the phone from Jacksonville is Lieutenant Colonel Thomas Greco, Deputy District Commander for South Florida Jacksonville District, U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. Welcome to the program, sir.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here, and I just wanted to point out I am with the Jacksonville District, but I'm stationed out of West Palm Beach.
Okay. Well, wherever you are, we welcome you to our airwaves today, and we welcome your input as well. You can join our conversation. This is WGCU 877-428-8255, 877-GCU-TALK. You can also send an email to Gulf Coast Live at WGCU.org, and you can comment on Facebook at WGCU Public Media. Let's start with you, Rayanne, briefly. What do the coastal waters of Lee County look like right now, and what waterways are we talking about?
So we're talking about the Coosawhatchee, which bisects southwest Florida, the communities of Glades, Hendry, and Lee County, and deliver the water out to the Gulf of Mexico via San Carlos Bay, Matlache Pass, Pine Island Sound, and Estero Bay. And the quality is very, very dark. We have high colored water caused by colored dissolved organic matter that's washing in with a tremendous amount of nutrients. And it's very poor quality right now.
Is it safe to swim and eat fish from those waters?
The health department monitors water at the beaches every week, and they post any health advisories or shellfish limits. We don't currently have shellfishing open in these waters locally. Of course, at this point, the freshwater has been delivered in such a long period of time, and it's so fresh that we have oyster mortality. We have very few scallops, which can move away. There are impacts to clams and other species, so it's not the time to be harvesting your own.
Okay. But it's okay to swim?
As far as I know, I haven't seen any advisories.
Lieutenant Colonel Greco, I saw the letter Governor Rick Scott sent to the Army Corps of Engineers. The mayor of Sanibel was in Tallahassee Monday. There was a human chain along the waterways in Martin and St. Lucie counties a couple weeks ago protesting the releases. The Corps says the releases need to continue to protect the dike. Is it safe to say that you're sort of between a rock and a hard place?
Well, I think the point about protecting the dike is critical, and we're operating within our existing authorities. It is a tenuous situation because, as you pointed out earlier, there really is no other place to send these volumes of water. But we're doing a lot to try and move restoration forward within South Florida, But, you know, to a large extent, yes, we are between a rock and a hard place. We've been in this together with the state for 60-some-odd years, and, you know, it's a very difficult situation.
I know you have a long-term plan to strengthen the dike. Is it possible to expedite the plan?
Well, we've actually been moving at a very rapid rate as far as this construction goes. We plan the project in order to, you know, maximize the resources that are available, in other words, appropriated by Congress. We are on a good path to get the culverts done in fiscal year 18, and, you know, we'll take whatever resources are available and use them, but by the same token, we have an obligation to ensure that we ask for resources that we could reasonably implement.
And once it's done, let's project ourselves 15 years into the future. All this work has been done. The dike has been strengthened. Does that mean that you'll be able to how much higher will the water level be able to go in the lake?
Well, in terms of the maximum water level that we would be able to safely handle for basically a 30-day period, could be as high as 18 feet or higher. But the key here is that we currently operate under a water control plan that's publicly vetted and developed in accordance with national laws. Where the lake level maximum actually goes has yet to be determined, but we're strengthening the dike in order to be able to accommodate a 1-in-100-year flood event. So that maximum stage is 21 feet. But it's important to keep in mind that the operating schedule, when we time releases or flows to certain parts of the area, really is dependent on whatever the future schedule looks like. And right now, and it's been shown that operating the lake traditionally between 12.5 and 15.5 feet is optimal for the lake ecology. The other point to keep in mind is the fact that regardless of any maximum stage that the dike can physically handle, we always have to ensure there's enough storage capacity in there to handle future storm events.
Okay. Rayanne, you are shaking your head over there. You agree, you disagree? What you have a follow-up to the Lieutenant Colonel?
I think this is a very important point, that the Corps has an obligation to protect public health and safety, so they're working on the dike. However, the current lake regulation schedule of 12.5 to 15.5 feet water level was developed both to be optimally functional for the ecology of the lake and also to reduce these high volume discharges to the estuaries. If you'll remember back under the previous schedule, WSE, Water Supply for the Environment, we actually had very high volumes constantly in the 90s with a lot of devastation. So what's important about the lake regulation schedule currently is it's optimal for the grass in the lake and the marsh, and those are critical to the water quality we enjoy on the West Coast, to the fisheries, to the snail kite nesting on the lake, and also for the benefit of estuarine communities. So when we hear people talk about the solution is fix the dike and raise the lake, we don't want to go back there. That was operating the lake, this natural lake, as a reservoir, and that doesn't serve anyone's purposes economically or ecologically.
Lieutenant Colonel Greco, there was a recent news that a plan to divert some water from the lake south is moving forward. That would be the Central Everglades Planning Project. It would send 65.2 million gallons of water south rather than east and west. How much of a difference would that make? And I don't know if I have all those numbers correct, but is that a pretty significant new avenue of release for this excess water?
Well, it's definitely significant in terms of the fact that it is really the first step in comprehensive Everglades restoration that takes water from Lake Okeechobee and moves it south. It will have an impact on both estuaries in a positive manner, but it's certainly not the silver bullet that's going to eliminate discharges. The Central Everglades Planning Project, certainly is key to the future of the estuaries, and I think noticeable improvements will be had, but there's still some time to implement that project.
What happens to the south? you know, when we send all that, right now we're sending it to the east and the west. What happens when we send it to the south, to, what is it, Florida Bay down there? Is, will that experience problems similar to what we're having now, or are you building filtration marshes or something to ease the flow? What's it look like in the end?
Right, so there's several different components to that. One is a state component, which is their restoration strategies to improve water quality as it flows into the Everglades. But really what's happening with the Central Everglades Planning Project is achieving a long-term goal in that southern end of the system, and that's improving conveyance and sheet flow through primarily Water Conservation Area 3A into Everglades National Park. Our modeling and our analysis so far that we've conducted, and we've worked with the public extensively on this, has shown that there will be benefits, and certainly the ability to move higher volumes of water. The goal, though, and I want to underscore the fact that you know, as before the water even enters the Everglades or Water Conservation Area 3A, it'll be cleaned with this state restoration program.
Rayanne, are you hopeful that this is maybe not this? It's not the silver bullet, but it's definitely a step in the right direction.
Actually, the biggest solution we have is restoring flows south out of Lake Okeechobee, and that will necessitate two things. It will necessitate us acquiring land and building projects in that area south of the lake and raising Tamiami Trail, because any water that we send south has got to get under an additional bridged section of Tamiami Trail to prevent flooding. But I did want to your previous point, make the case that Everglades National Park and Florida Bay are currently, while we're getting deluged with excess water, they're still in a deficit. So restoring these flows south is an important coastal component of those two systems.
And those bridges are already being built on Lower 41.
The one-mile section is built and complete. The next 5.5 miles, the 2.6 of the next 5.5 miles is looking for money now, so in the appropriation process. And that's a really critical project, because we can't, till you open up the bottom of the bathtub, you can't put more water in.
So how many miles are we talking about, would you eventually?
of bridging?
Yeah, like 40 miles or something.
Oh, no. I think it's closer to 10.
10.
And
that will really help a lot? Will that help a lot?
It goes right. It is the critical piece to being able to flow water through the deepest part of the old slough of the historic Everglades.
Right. When Charlie Crist was governor, a plan was announced to buy up a big chunk of land now used for sugar cultivation to store water from Lake Okeechobee. The plan was sort of shelved. What would it have done to help, and is there a possibility that that could still happen? What do you know about that, Lieutenant Colonel Greco?
I'm aware of that. You know, that was a plan to purchase land and you know, fulfill one of the target objectives of comprehensive Everglades restoration, which was to provide storage and improve conveyance to the south. You know, certainly a component of that concept is going to be needed in the future as we build upon the Central Everglades Planning Project. The state has the responsibility to acquire lands. You know, a lot has already been acquired to date, but I understand you're referring specifically to the EAA. Right now, there are no specific plans to reinstitute or reengage on the concept of that central flowway, because SEP is really needed prior to that occurring.
Rayanne Wessel, Governor Scott's letter to the Army Corps of Engineers holds the federal government completely responsible for the quagmire we're in right now. Do you agree?
Absolutely not. That it's a 50-50 partnership, and I would ask, you know, maybe use this radio letter to the governor to say, let's focus the state's efforts, because the state does have a role in this. First of all, let's complete the U.S. sugar purchase, the 153,200 acres south of the lake was negotiated with a three-year price guarantee. That is up in October of this year. So let's buy the rest of that land so that we have the flexibility to do what we need to do, both with SEP, this planning process, and also in moving water, which has to be stored as well as conveyed so that it can have some treatment. But in addition, he has the ability to use some of the Restore Act funding that's coming from the BP oil spill settlements to help fund that Tamiami Trail segment. So there are a number of things in addition to watershed projects. He announced $40 million for the St. Lucie. We'd like $40 million for the Caloosahatchee watershed, where we have a series of watershed projects that we need for both water quality treatment as well as storage. So the state has a definite role to play here, and we just ask the governor to step up and play ball.
So it seems like it's sort of been politicized, and we really don't need to go there. We just need to go towards a solution that's worse for everyone.
Again, you know, building the dike stronger and raising water levels is not the solution. The solution is restoring that flow once again through the Everglades and to the south.
This is Gulf Coast Live on WGCU. You can join our conversation, 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. You can send an email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org or comment on Facebook at WGCU Public Media. Lieutenant Colonel Greco, what are you hearing from the people whose livelihoods depend on the Everglades agricultural area?
I have not heard any comments in particular directed specifically at me, but I've attended several meetings. You know, I think there's a sense out there that, you know, with holding water on fallow fields, there's a lot being done to help alleviate the current issues out there. But with regard to the EAA in particular, I have not received any direct comments or questions.
And we know that tourism drives our economy, and many people, you know, move to coastal Florida for the quality of life and enjoying, among other things, the water quality. But agriculture is a pretty big part of what we do in Florida, Rayanne. It's a multi-billion-dollar entity that you know helps feed America. How do we balance that with sending water south through the EAA?
So it is important to retain agriculture as part of our tapestry of landscape. I think, as using the term realtors often use, it's all location, location, location. At one time, it made sense to be growing food down in the old flowway, recapturing the Everglades, but they didn't have any understanding about what the consequence of that would be. And the necessity to create the St. Lucie Canal to augment twice the Caloosahatchee Canal portion of the river just goes to show that there is an extreme amount of state funding, taxpayer funding, that is going into and has always gone into working around this plug in the system, which really needs to be restored. So this is not a debate, or should not be an argument to get rid of agriculture. Homeland security, food security, all of that, we're better off with local producing of our food. But in this case, you know, there is a real need to look honestly at the solution and figure out what would it really cost to restore that flow.
We've got a caller on the phone. This is Mike. Mike, welcome to Gulf Coast Live. You had a comment
Hello.
For us?
Well, yes. I was just wondering if anybody's considered that instead of taking all this money and time to raise the dike, has it ever been considered to dredge the lake by a foot or two and increase the capacity that way?
Is that a viable option, Lieutenant Colonel Greco?
Well, to answer Mike's question directly, it has been analyzed in the past, and the findings are several fold. Number one, it would be extremely expensive, upwards of a minimum of at least $3 billion. But the other point that's often brought up is that it would not necessarily increase the storage capacity significantly or change the level of flows, but also that just the simple act of dredging the muck on the bottom of the lake would actually provide a huge ecological problem for the lake by stirring up all that sediment.
I remember reading about Lake Apopka cleaning the lake, and yeah, it was kind of it had unintended consequences. So, Rayanne, what do you think of that possibly?
So he's absolutely right. The water table would not make for, because of the way the water table is, going deeper wouldn't add storage or capacity. We'd all love to see the muck on the bottom of the lake removed, but when it's been looked at, how you get it into trucks, how you get it taken away, where you put it, in addition to the very flocculent material we'd be talking about that gets suspended and just doesn't settle out easily, would have a huge impact on the lake ecology. So while it is one of those things that would be desired, it's actually been talked about as possibly being buried within the lake to keep it from fluxing up into the water column and causing additional water quality problems. Sort of odd, ironic.
Yeah, how do you bury something in the thing it came from?
Well, this would be all the phosphorus and nitrogen that has accumulated in the dead plants that have degraded, and they're sitting on the bottom of the deepest part of the lake. That's what we, during the hurricanes, get stirred up and suspended, and then is a huge ecological disaster. So if you could bury that within the lake, but there again, you're talking about priorities. Where do you spend your money? Where do you get the biggest bang for the buck?
Do you think the citizens of St. Lucie and Martin County and Lee County would be willing to tax themselves to dedicate a fund specifically to dealing with this issue, which is so important to the quality of life, to expediting fixes for the lake?
Well, we already are. Through the South Florida Water Management District, every property owner has a line on their tax bill that goes directly to the South Florida Water Management District for all of these projects. On the West Coast here, we'd like to see more of that money come home in projects that are being done to help alleviate problems on the West Coast. Very happy for the East Coast folks who have just gotten the governor's commitment for $40 million in addition. But, these systems are pairs, and we already take the largest volume of water because of the size of the river and estuary. So we need that equitable treatment.
Looking at the map, the water goes Lake Okeechobee is a lot closer to the East Coast than the West Coast, so it travels further, but it delivers more volume over here than it does over there.
Right. The split is at the high point is probably 70%, 20%. We get 70%, anywhere from 50 to 70%, depending on volumes, and they get about 20. That's a 35-mile-long canal. It's a much smaller river, and because it was totally a canal. On the west side here, the western Everglades came up around the west side of Lake Okeechobee, and there were a series of four lakes and marshes that fed the upper Caloosahatchee, where it tumbled over a waterfall to start the river. There wasn't a navigable river between the coast and the lake. So the loss of 11,000 acres of lake and marshlands, where water was steeping and slowly pressing to the west, was a great design. But now that we don't have it anymore, we have to try to recreate that. But we're 75 miles long. They're 35. We're much wider and deeper.
We did a story last week about water levels this summer in the River of Grass forcing small mammals onto increasingly smaller areas of dry land as the tree islands are immersed. Would releasing water to the south of the lake increase the threat to the mammals, to the, you know, the deers and the deer and the bunny rabbits and the raccoons and stuff like that?
This is part of the reason that there has to be a combination storage as well as conveyance down to the south, because while there's been a lot of rain falling throughout this system from Kissimmee all the way to the Everglades, and some of that water that's flooding the Everglades now is dammed up by the Tamiami Trail. So being able to stage and manage the water as it goes south would be another critical component.
It seems like we've tried to engineer our way around Mother Nature. Everything seems to be going well, and then we have a wet summer hurricane, and we can't turn back the clock. Lieutenant Colonel Greco, do you think we can engineer and build our way out of this situation?
Well, that's certainly the goal is to engineer a solution. I don't know if it can. It most certainly will not get back to the way it used to be before humans intervened and started digging canals. But I think a lot can be done locally at the state level and certainly at the federal level to alleviate significantly the issues that we're confronting.
Well, I would just say, too, that we have a proving ground in the Kissimmee River restoration. That's a three-mile-wide floodplain that was less like the Caloosahatchee and more like the Everglades, and that project has been a tremendous success, unmitigated success. And so, to me, it's really the proving ground that if we unbuild it, Mother Nature will take over, and it will once again be productive.
That was this restoration in Oxbow?
It's where they're filling in the channel, the channel that was created, and forcing the water back into those meanders, which had become oxbows, but they were really the original meanders of the river, and flooding the floodplain. It's a combination.
I think I had that. It's out by Fort Juneau. I think I had the opportunity to go out there once and see how the project was progressing.
They've blown up a couple of dikes and been able to restore the natural flow.
You know, a lot of people, we were talking earlier about the Everglades agricultural area, a lot of people involved in agriculture in this state are also very into boating and fishing. This is a very, I guess both of you would say this is a very conflicted issue. Lieutenant Kern.
There are certainly a lot of interests that are involved in the process to restore the Everglades. I think, you know, everybody certainly has a valid point of view, and the key, and I think the important thing to understand is that as we move forward on these projects, you know, we do our best to balance all those competing interests so that, you know, the goal is for everyone to win when Everglades restoration is complete.
And Rayanne, what's your, in 30 seconds, what's the best thing we can do, in your opinion?
We've got to restore flows south out of Lake Okeechobee, build Tamiami Trail Bridge, and start storage in all of the basins.
We are going to leave it there. Thank you very much, Rayanne Wessel with the Sanibel Captiva Conservation Foundation, for joining us today. And also Lieutenant Colonel Thomas Greco with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. Thank you for your time.
It's my pleasure.
Thank you.
This is Gulf Coast Live on WGCU Fort Myers, 90.1 FM, WMKO Marco, 91.7 FM. Our engineers are Luke Martin and Richard Chinqui. We had help from John Davis. I'm Valerie Alker. Stay with us, and thanks for listening.
When wild winds are blowing across the Okeechobee, they're calling and seeking for other poor souls. Oh, Lake Okeechobee's blue waters are cold.